We are officially live. Welcome to week three's Beard Watch.
It is really starting to get out of hand now.
Well, yours is.
Yeah, I think I'm just going to let it do its thing until we're officially out of lockdown to see how wild it can go.
I think you should grow your hair back.
Then I'd go from looking like, at least if the beard's a little bit out of control, but the head's like freshly shaved, it looks kind of intentional. If I'm just letting everything kind of grow out and unkempt, it looks, yeah.
What are you trying to say?
Look for me. No, but you see, my head's a lot, my hairstyle's a lot easier to maintain. It's literally just, you know, clip it straight back. Whereas I know you like to get yours styled, you get the little, you get like the little quiff going, don't you? It's kind of hard to do in the bathroom.
I do nothing to my hair.
But you're stuck with the beard, though. You're trying to grow it out. How are you finding it?
It's no longer itchy. It's starting to get very bushy here.
Right. Not too much going on like the cheeks, though, is there? Like,
all right.
No, you'll get there, mate.
It's like this bit. Still smooth, like a baby's bub. One day I'll be as manly as you, Jack. One day.
That is that a regular size bottle? Or is that a large one?
Yeah, I've just got tiny hands.
I was going to say, because I saw you drinking it, it looks way bigger, and I was like, is the camera distorted? Or no, it's a larger bottle, isn't it?
It's a 660.
I remember now, you get like this. Yeah.
If anyone's interested, they are £3 for £5 currently in Tesco.
Nice.
Get down there.
So, what are we discussing, chatting about today then?
Today is the famed Desert Island Rums category. So we're going to just talk about a few of our rums that we would really like if we were stranded on a desert island, which kind of feels like we are now, I suppose.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you know what? All the things that I would put in my list, I would love to have to hand right now. And I think any that I'm going to name, I don't have any. In fact, I'm almost out of rum completely in my flat. I definitely need to get... I need to replenish the stocks.
I have this much Ray Nephew left.
Yeah, I'm down to basically like a half a bottle of Bacardi. And that's it for daiquiris.
I think these are rums that for one reason or another are kind of quite special to us, I think. And we certainly enjoy drinking them probably more than we should, shall we say.
Oh, what do you mean?
Well, you know, if something's nice, you should treasure it. And we just kind of take it for granted and probably drink them.
Oh, no, no way, man. I disagree with that completely. I think that we always like savour, just because we've got some more to hand, because obviously we work with a lot of these products and we're forever trying to find new stuff to get into stock and things like that. So we do quite a lot of tastings and sessions with people. I think any time that we have a rum, whether it's, you know, sampling it with someone or, bottom line, if you've worked 14 hours on a Saturday, it's 3 a.m, it's finally closed up and you have a seat and you have a little, you know, have a little measure of rum, I think we savour it. I think when you say we enjoy it more than we should, I think that it's more, it sucks that we enjoy it so much because they tend to be slightly more premium, so they're a bit more expensive or a bit harder to get hold of sometimes. So you don't always have the luxury of just having it to hand, which is definitely a shame.
Yeah, by the way, before we start this, if anyone wants to send us any of these rums...
Well, more than welcome. You can just DM us and we'll send you our address.
Please get in touch. That'd be great. That really helps out. It would really show your support to this podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we're more than happy to... We're more than happy to do a review, do a little tasting session. Interactive, it's all good. Yeah.
Right then, let's get this underway. Do you want to go first, Mr. Mitchell?
No. You can go first. And
oh, yes, such a gentleman.
always. Yeah, fire away. So do you have like, because I have some rooms that I have been kind of wanting to talk about and stuff like that, but I don't really have like a, you know, to five from, you know, favorite to, and it's not like in any kind of order mine. Do you know what I mean? Like I just have five.
No, neither is mine.
Stranded somewhere.
Neither is mine.
Okay, cool. Because I was going to say, I'm going to have to try and figure that out on the fly, which would be very, very difficult. So, cool.
I am starting off pretty big, though. So, be prepared. We're going for the Caroni Velia Bottling 21 year from 1996. Is it?
Yeah. Sounds about right.
Yes. Sounds about right. Yes, it is. For me, this is just incredible. Like, I think it's one of those rums that just makes me smile and it makes me happy inside. And there's a lot of reasons why, but I'd be very hard pressed to kind of put kind of a specific reason behind it. It's just an amalgamation of wonderful things all at the same time. I know certainly like the first time me and you tried it, Jack, I think we both didn't speak for a little while after we first drank it, which kind of says a lot, because usually we kind of come to a fairly immediate conclusion with things, or, you know.
Yeah. No, I remember because it's quite a funny story. So over the course of like the last probably 2 years, you were sort of like tasked with rewriting the rum menu for where we work in the Smuggler's Cove. So over the course of that few years, you were kind of like trawling, you know, forums online and reading reviews and reading articles and tasting stuff and arranging meetings and things like that. And you were trying quite a lot of rums. And then I started getting more involved with the process as well and things like that. And you had your kind of finalized list, you know, and you had to do quite a lot of chopping and changing for various reasons. And you had your final solid list of things that you wanted to get. And naturally, a lot of them were things that you'd read a lot about and heard a lot about, but you were like super excited to try. So when the day came where we finally like got a big order of new stock in, we essentially like sat down, didn't we, and did like a massive tasting session, just sort of like worked our way through. And you know, while we were doing that, we were like looking up information, or you already had a lot of notes that you'd taken and information that you'd gleaned from various sources and stuff like that. And we were trying all these different various bits, and the Caroni was, it was certainly something that I'd never tried. I'd not tried like too similar of a style. What's the way to phrase it? I'd not tried a rum that was notable for having any kind of like similarities to something like a Caroni. It really stood out to me as a very, very unique expression. I loved it from the get-go. Unfortunately, it's the only one at the moment that we've really tried. Well, we've sampled a few that aren't like commercially available, haven't we? But we've not, there's a whole range of expressions that are still out there, and we definitely have to try as soon as we can. But yeah, the 21 years, fantastic.
It's one of those things where if you could try and describe what it tastes like, I don't think many people would be impressed, or they'd be a bit like, why would you like that taste?
Yeah.
It's kind of got that sort of petrol-y kind of element to it. You know, it's, I think it's 57.18%, so it's like imperial 100 proof. It's boozy, it's kind of, yeah, it is quite petrol-y, but then at the same time, you know, it kind of blends together like the oak. You've got like a bit of spiciness in there, you've got like some really old, almost going off fruit in there, and it's almost like a bit musty as well, weirdly, but for me anyway. But I think it's absolutely delicious. It's one of those things that is so complicated, and it stays with you for a while after you drink it as well.
Yeah, and the story behind it's so fascinating as well, because Caroni, it hails from Trinidad, and I think the actual distillery shut down in, was it like late 1999, early 2000s? Something like that.
So I think they actually kept making rum till about 2002.
Okay.
But it was like basically just fulfilling orders. They weren't sort of they weren't taking any new business, put it that way.
Yeah.
From around them.
So as a result, kind of like all the stores that were left have kind of been bought up, haven't they, by various different, distributors or kind of rum manufacturers, or a lot of people have bought up barrels, casks, whatever, they're aging them themselves or getting experimental and doing things with them. And notably, the Italian bottle of Velia, they've released like a whole range of different Corona expressions. They don't tend to be very cheap. I mean, it is a very premium product, partially because they are getting very, very rare these days. So once they are gone, they're gone. I think the 21 year that we're talking about clocks in at about, is it like 220? £240 a bottle?
Yeah, I think it's 240 at the moment.
Something like that.
They go right up to like, £2,000 a bottle?
Yeah, yeah. And I think, I was going to say, I think the 21 year is probably one of the cheapest ones, right? I know they've got like an 18-year expression, a 17-year expression.
There's a few knocking around.
Yeah.
There's even like a, you can't get it anymore, I don't think, or I haven't seen it for a long time. There's a 15-year of a very similar, basically like the same sort of bottle styling as the one we're talking about, but it's
right,
15,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
But obviously that got released a bit earlier, so it's all gone because it's wonderful. It's one of those very unique rums that we'll just never see again. I mean, once.
Yeah, I don't think it's a style.
It's gone, isn't it?
Yeah, and I don't think it's a style that people would be able to, like, emulate very... They wouldn't be able to kind of, like, fake it, if you know what I mean. Like, it's a style that is... I think it's very kind of... It's very much ingrained in the culture over there from like, what you hear about these things. They've got a very set and specific way of doing things. I think they guard it very, very heavily. I think they take a lot of pride and take a lot of care in doing what they do. I don't think it's something you could just copy. I think the real deal is very, very authentic. And if you were trying to kind of like, if you were just trying to sort of like fake that, it wouldn't work. Do you know what I mean? Like the product wouldn't taste good. It's like you were saying before with your descriptions, I get very, very similar kind of like taste and notes than you do. And as you say, description wise it doesn't always sound that appealing, but it really, really works. However, I imagine you can get it very, very right or very, very wrong, and if you got that kind of style very wrong, it would be awful. Do you know what I mean? I don't think there'd be any in between with it. It's either going to be absolutely amazing or it's going to be terrible. I don't think there's any kind of in between, and that's why I don't think you would get an average Caroni expression. It'd always be amazing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think it would take a lot of time and a lot of trial and error to kind of recreate what they had in the old distillery. I mean, it's a wider thing for Trinidad. It's so sad that they've only got, I think in about 1950 or 1950s, they had over 50 distilleries there. And now they've just got Angostura. It's a bit of a shame. But it's kind of the way everywhere's gone, really. You know, you look at Guyana, etc.
What was the reason behind that? Was it like, did Angostura kind of like monopolize it and buy up a lot of the other distilleries, or was there just less demand for the product, so they closed down?
I think it was more to do with the sugar industry, really.
Okay.
So rum really wasn't that huge, I don't think, in the 50s, really, apart from stuff like Bacardi, maybe. I don't think a lot of people were drinking sort of Trinidad rum that time. So it's a bit more to do with sugar, I think.
Okay.
Than anything else.
That makes sense. Yeah.
As far as I know, anyway, but feel free to comment and correct me, by all means. Anyone knows a bit more about the history of Trinidad, feel free. So it's over to you, Jack. I think we've walked on enough about that wonderful rum.
Do you want to, let me think. Okay, so, because I've got my little list, here. I think my first one is, and funnily enough, when it came to that big tasting that I was talking about before, and the kind of, when we got like a whole massive stock of new rums in to try, this one was also in the list. So it is the Worthy Park single estate. So there are a whole different, there's a whole different range of these. But the one particularly that I really like is the 57% ABV variant that I'm not sure if you can get it anymore. I know that we still have a bottle in Smugglers, but commercially, I'm not sure if we can actually get it. I've been looking around everywhere because I've actually been looking for a couple of bottles to kind of treat myself to, and that was first on the list. I can't seem to find it anywhere. They do have a slightly lower alcohol version. They've got one that clocks in at 46%, and it's actually one that I've not tried before.
It won Spirit of the Year for Whiskey Exchange last year. So.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of hype about it. I'm sure it's great. I mean, it's probably going to have to be what I go for, given that I can't find the stronger variant. And it'd be nice to see how they differ. But from experience from like rums that I've tried before, when they have like an overproof version, say like Hampden, for example, and the Hampden overproof, I think that's very similar, right? So I think the original Hampden is like 46 or... Yeah. Or 42, I think it's 46. But then the overproof is 60, isn't it? So yeah. I always just remember the labels. So the regular one is the green label and the overproof is the red, or like the red and yellow. The overproof is just, in my opinion, it's so much more satisfying. It's, I don't know, that higher ABV somehow adds like an element of like sweetness. It's amazing rum. But yeah, the Worthy Park, for me, I think it's more of just like... it evokes a lot of very positive emotions, if that makes sense. So this is a rum, despite its strength and also despite the fact that it's from Jamaica and it does have some of that kind of funk and that sort of heaviness that is associated with Jamaican rums. The mouthfeel, it's like very, very oily. When you have a little sip of it, it like really coats your mouth and it's super, super smooth. For anyone that's ever drank like Campbelltown whiskies before, very, very similar kind of mouthfeel to that. And it's something that I really enjoy. This rum is like my sort of go-to. If I've ever had like a really heavy shift, anyone that works in hospitality will know you have those very grueling 14-hour Saturday shifts sometimes. And, you know, you just sit down at the end of it and you're there with the other staff members that have been on with you and no one speaks for 5 minutes. You just crack open a beer or you have a rum or whatever. And I would say that the Worthy Park single estate is always kind of my go-to. It doesn't matter how tired I am. You know, sometimes there are some rums, like the Caroni we were just talking about. It's an amazing rum. If I'm literally, you know, if I'm running on steam and I'm, you know, is running on steam the right phrase?
No, absolutely not.
I was going to say, running on steam has never been really energized, right? If I'm shattered.
Running on empty, you mean?
running on empty. You know, if you've been working all day, you know, you just want to relax. Don't get me wrong, the Caroni's great, but it is very heavy, you know. Something like this.
It's just very complicated. You know, you have to think about the Caroni, whereas...
Yeah. And the things with the Worthy Park, I mean, it's still very complex. There's like a lot of stuff going on there. But I don't know, it's just something about the mixture of that mouthfeel and then there's like some fruitiness that shines through as well. And it's just, yeah, I mean, it's a fantastic rum.
Once again, like for me, this is brilliant. Like I've got the next thing that we're going to talk about is probably edges it for me, but it is very similar. But I think Worthy Park is a great kind of distillery. Everything they're chucking out at the moment is just really, really good. And, you know, they make a lot of room for other things as well, and blends and stuff like that, and other bottlers. But it's like very typically, it's typically Jamaican, but like Jack said, this is just on the smoother side for the ABV anyway. It's 57%, right?
I think it's either 56 or 57. Yeah.
It's so easy to drink. Like, you don't really have to worry about it too much. You can kind of, like Jack said, it is complicated, but if you kind of don't want to think about it too much, you can just sit there and drink it.
It's such a nice mix of this. Go on.
Oh no, you crack on.
No, I was just going to say, this is kind of almost like it's really hard to describe, but there's such a nice balance of the sweetness, but then there's like the heavy pot still kind of notes that really linger as well after you've drank it. So it's got like it's really nice and sweet, and then it's got that really long finish. And as I say, because it's so oily, it just coats your mouth and it just lingers, and it's so pleasant.
It certainly sticks around for a little bit, yeah. You know, it's such a great balance of that, like sort of Jamaican, a lot of funk and stuff, and sweetness and oakiness and that oiliness, just kind of like, it makes it feel very classy, I think. It feels like a very classy rum to drink, almost.
And they do have a lot of other, I'm pretty sure they've got an expression, like a port cask expression, like an Oloroso, Oloroso sherry one. I think they've got a few different variants that are out there, so it's something that for a while now I've been thinking I definitely need to try, and I'm going to look into getting a few different bottles and seeing how they all shape up. When it comes to any kind of like cask finishes or just fully aging rum in different casks and getting experimental, I feel like, you know, people can almost overdo it sometimes and it can kill the character of the rum a little bit. But I imagine a brand or like a distiller like Worthy Park, I imagine that they get the balance right. So yeah, I think the sherry cask is sort of next on the list, because that tends to be something that's quite easy to drink as well. If things have been finished or aged in sherry for a while, it adds again some more fruitiness and a little bit of sweetness, and sometimes it can be overpowering if it's not done right, but I feel like that will be a really nice kind of blend. And that mixed with the already kind of solid foundations of that product, I think it'll be a really nice mix.
I think the closest thing you can basically get to it now, if you don't want the 45% version, is there is a 56% version that's the 12-year Worthy Park. That's a touch more expensive. I mean, I think it's $110 a bottle. Just having a little cursory search. It's probably going to be similar, kind of quite mellow in terms of sort of Jamaican rum, where it's like very in your face. I imagine it's quite mellow, but there's still enough there going on that's going to really keep people interested. Which, again, I don't think me and you have tried that yet. But I would love to try the 12-year Worthy Park. I think that would be, it'd be something that might even change our mind on this particular rum. And we might be like, this one's better.
I always like to be proved wrong. So,
yeah.
Yeah. So what did you allude to then that might trump that choice?
I think you know what I'm going to say.
Fire away.
Hampton Overproof. Mm-hmm. Two words.
Solid choice.
It is a rum that, again, we tried it in this ridiculous, was it 18 rums we tried?
Yeah, well, initially we were going to kind of segregate it out, and we were going to do like two or three at a time, because we got like a very large order in from Speciality Drinks. So it was like Whiskey Exchange's sister kind of company, isn't it? They're all somehow linked. So we basically, that's where we get quite a lot of our more unique and interesting bottles from. And it was like Christmas. We just had this massive parcel, well, several parcels delivered, big boxes. And it was one of those where we tried one, and then we're like, okay, we'll maybe give one or two of these ones a go. And then before we knew it, we were just there all day, all night, sampling them and comparing, contrasting. And yeah, I mean, we've been waiting so long to try some of them, and it was just, so much variation. You're just never going to get bored, you know? That's what's so amazing about rum. You're never going to try five or six bottles back to back, and they're all, there's going to be so much variation. There's going to be so much difference. Yeah, I'd be very surprised if you started getting bored and thinking, oh, that's a bit samey. Like when we talk about these rums, you can't compare them to a certain extent, because they're all so different. Do you know what I mean? Like, I totally understand that, you know, you're saying like this Hampton maybe trumps it slightly, whatever, but they're just two different rums. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I would there'd be different occasions or different points in time where I would much prefer one or the other. It completely depends on my mood and the setting and stuff like that. All amazing products, just different. And that's what's so good.
Yeah, I'd agree with that 100%. I think me and you have spoken about this quite a lot, where you prefer the Worthy Park and I prefer the Hampton. I think there's, in terms of like, it's what you usually enjoy drinking more. I don't know, there's just something about that Hampton overproof.
Well, that's the thing though, because you say that, and there's been times when I've been like, hands down, it's definitely the Worthy Park that I prefer. But then there's been, say I've gone a month and I've not had the Hampton, and then I'll have it and I'm like, oh, you know what, that is actually really, really good. And it just, it's completely depends. It completely depends. Like, I imagine if I had a bottle of the Worthy Park right now and I had it in my flat, and you know, once a week I was having a little sip of it or whatever, and I'd not had the Hampton for months on end, I'm sure that when I then went to it, I'd prefer the Hampton, and that would be my preference. And yeah,
I think it kind of depends on the mood a lot, but I think my default would be I think I prefer the Hampton. There's just something about it that I say this to you all the time as well in work. It just makes me happy. I don't know what it is. I know what it is that they put in it, but they must put some secret added ingredients in there that happiness.
happiness invoking.
Yeah, something like
but
that.
But you know what? It's such good value. Like, I'm just having a look here. You know, it's not cheap by any means. $79.95 on Whiskey Exchange, but, you know, it is 60%. It's amazing quality rum. Like, it's not that expensive. I'm a big fan of like, brandy and whiskey and things like that. And you start to delve into that world. And when you're looking at certain bottles and, you know, when you're looking at things that have been aged for a little bit longer and things like that, it just gets so, you almost get priced out. Do you know what I mean? If you're just like a bit of an enthusiast and you want to give some things a go, you just get priced out of the market. Whereas what's so amazing about like a lot of these rums that we're discussing, as I say, they're not cheap by any means, but it's not completely just like out of the realms of possibility. I mean, like we, more often than not, if there's a bottle that we see that we like, we just split it, don't we? We've got like a little bit of a thing going where, like, you know, you'll get a bottle and then, you know, a month down the line, then I'll pick a bottle and then I'll get that, and then we'll both drink them together and see what they're like. And yeah, it's affordable. It's affordable enough that you can play around a little bit and try a few different things. And it's, you know, it's not like you're going to be wasting hundreds and hundreds of pounds if you get a bottle that, you know, maybe it's not all it's cracked up to be, or it's not quite for you.
I think there's a very big difference between that probably, let's say, 80 to 120 pound bracket. With rum, you can do so much with that. Whereas if you're like a Scotch whiskey drinker or like a brandy drinker, like you said, that's the beginning. That's like entry level stuff.
Yeah, entry level. Yeah.
Whereas, you know, you're talking like that £1,000 for a decent bottle, maybe, or, you know, certainly high hundreds. So it's kind of quite nice that there's so much sort of scope there in rum, between sort of 80 and 120, where you can really have a great time and drink ridiculously good things. Like, ridiculously
good things.
That's the thing.
Yeah, that's the main thing. Like, they are legit, authentic, highly complex, just high quality products. There's just no question. You know what I mean? When you research these distillers and you look into their methodology and how they do things, they're not cutting any corners. You know, it's a very, very long, arduous and specialized process that is creating these amazing liquids, and the price is just the steal. I've just got nothing else to say about that. It's, you know.
Back to the Hampton anyway. Oh, it's one of those things that actually probably splits the Caroni and the Worthy Park quite nicely, because it is a bit more on the sort of petrol-y side, I think, to the Worthy Park. But okay. There's still that Jamaica sort of old bananas and like grilled pineapple and a bit of filth in there as well, which is so good. Especially, I think especially at 60% rather than the 46, I think it really starts to shine then.
Yeah. Well, Hampden are really kind of well known for their long fermentation process, aren't they? Right at the start, before the kind of distillation. They've got their kind of signature Dunder Pits, which we won't discuss that now, but it's maybe something we could get into in the future. But
that was kind of a different pod, yeah.
yeah. Those kind of elements end up creating a really, really unique and complex, you know, final product.
And it's only recently they actually started releasing their own stuff. I believe in Jamaica, they're not overly well known yet. I mean, Jamaicans,
I imagine, in the last
a lot. This guy.
I imagine in the last couple of years, it started to pick up some traction.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you look at sort of like people like Christelle and stuff who are really getting out there. So, but yeah, it's one of those rums that is just Jamaica through and through, overproof, which I think I really enjoy anyway.
What more could you ask for, right?
Well, yeah, it ticks a lot of my boxes, but fundamentally, it does just make me really happy. It just puts a smile on my face every time I drink one, regardless of I've done no work that day or, like Jack said, you're running on steam.
Definitely not running on steam. I'm certainly not running on steam after a 13-hour shift. 14
put it that way. And regardless of time, situation, place, it will always just put a smile on my face whenever I drink some, fundamentally. So that is why it's on the list. Solid. Jack Mitchell, go.
All right. So next up for me is something from Eldorado's Rare Collection. So again, going back to our monumental tasting session, one of the rums that we got in was the Eldorado Enmore. So this is a 1993. So it's 21-year-old, and this one is a little bit harder to come by. It was a lot smaller of a batch. Kind of biased, because 93, the best year, whether it's for rum making, being born, you know. And you picked the Enmore, I believe, because, well, they've got a few different variants, right? So they've got the naming of all the bottles refers to the stills in which they were created. And Eldorado operates out of Demerara Distillers, where it's like Diamond Distillers Limited, DDL.
Yeah, it's all Guyana as well.
So basically, each of these in this rare collection is named after the still that they've kind of were initially distilled on. So there's the Enmore, there's Versailles, and there's also Port Marant as well. Now, I believe you went for the Enmore because from reviews and information that you sourced, you figured like this one would be the most accessible to kind of like consumers that were coming into the bar.
So in that collection, by the way, this is actually on my list as well. So.
Oh, that kills two birds with one stone.
Yeah. This is from that collection that was out at the same time, the three different stills. This one's the lowest ABV. It's 56.5. Which in terms of us in, obviously, Smuggler's Cove, we don't want to blow people's heads off that much. Well, occasionally, but...
this one's quite interesting. Yeah, it's a fine line, isn't it? Because I imagine someone that is a bit more of an enthusiast would go for something like this. So chances are someone that was an enthusiast would be a bit more experienced drinking this kind of thing anyway. So they wouldn't, the ABV isn't something that would particularly face them. I feel like the more of the kind of rum world you delve into, or any spirits really, if something's high quality, the ABV doesn't matter. It shouldn't be super daunting. Obviously, you've got to be careful with what you're drinking and be responsible, but it doesn't matter whether you're drinking beers or you're drinking, you know, overproof rum, should always be kind of moderated a little bit anyway. But yeah, I mean, this for me is amazing. I've not had the opportunity yet to try any of the others. Me and you have discussed this before, and like the Port Morant is very much on our hit list. Yeah. And that one, I mean, that one's a little bit strong. It's a little over 61%, I believe. And the Port Morant still itself has a fantastic and like unique history. It's like the world's largest double wooden pot still. So, and it's been around for hundreds of years now. I mean, I don't even know how it still operates. I presume that they must do fairly frequent maintenance to it at this point, and it must be reinforced and kind of jacked up with like some kind of more modern technology, or I don't know. Just intuitively, to me, it doesn't make sense how something could be made of wood and take that much usage and still be good to go. So I imagine that it gets a fair lot of, you know, refurbishment and care. But as a result of this still, the amount of flavour that is imparted into the final products, anything that comes off of Port Morant still, or typically there'll be blends now, and it'll be a mixture of like Jamaica, Guyana, Barbados, for example, like Diabless rum from Manchester. It uses a mix of all three, and that kind of Guyana element really shines through. And Port Morant in particular has got, in my opinion, I can't even really describe the flavour profile from the rums that come off that still, but they really just resonate with me in a good way. The Enmore is something that I've got less familiarity with, to be honest, but I don't know, this rum, it's just so good.
The Enmore is also a wooden still, but it's I think the only wooden column still in the world, I believe. So again, the amount of maintenance that they must have to do and upkeep with it for it must be ridiculous, because I imagine they're swapping out bits of wood left, right and centre. But it's been going for a very long time. It's also a great sort of the thing they use a lot for the biggest range of rums in the Diamond Distillery. So they can make quite a light rum with it. They can make quite a heavy rum with it as well. It's very versatile.
A lot of flexibility there. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's named after, I think, the guy that made it, maybe, or the guy that owned the distillery at the time. It's Edward Henry Porter. Which you might see knocking around. It's like EHP, they shorten it to.
Okay.
So they used to put that, basically used to stamp that on the barrels, I believe, for stuff that's made in this Enmore still. So if you see EHP on a bottle, it'll refer to that and have some Enmore in it.
Yeah.
Or be the holding it.
The final product's so good. It's just, you've just got the classic kind of characteristics. You've got, you know, your tobacco, you've got your like leather smoothness, you've got caramel, vanilla, you've just got all the good stuff, just ticks all the boxes. Funnily enough, I think it was when we met with Cleo from Diabless, was one of the last times that I tried this. So we've been talking about the rum that she created, and we were talking about the blend that was in there. And as I alluded to before, it's a the normal kind of like, I believe it's just like the Diabless gold rum that they have, is a mixture of Jamaica, Guyana, Barbados. And the kind
of... The holy trinity.
Exactly. And the element from Guyana, if I remember rightly, it was off the Port Morant still. I think that's where that element in the blend kind of comes from. And I said at the time, because I was showing off our kind of rum collection when we were in Smugglers, and I just said, I mean, we don't have the kind of Port Morant, but this should be at least the next best thing. And we were drinking it, and it was the first time I'd tried it in a while and thought, you know what, this is something special.
It's something that when I originally tried, I wasn't too overwhelmed with. Like, I thought it was very nice, but it didn't really, like, absolutely blow my mind. And then I think the third or fourth time I had it, I was like, oh my God, this is something else.
Warm to it.
Yeah.
In terms of price point, this one's starting to get up there a little bit. it sits at, is it about 170, 180 a bottle?
I think so, yeah. I think it used to be around 150, but it's gone up a touch.
Yeah.
They're a little bit rare.
So, yeah, so all of the Eldorado collection, I mean, they've got some fantastic expressions that are slightly less aged. Yeah, I'm pretty sure we discussed it in a previous podcast that we did, but, you know, like they're, everything from their 3 year to their 21 year, they're all fantastic rums, and all those don't even push kind of like 80, 85 quid, do they? Maybe the 21 is
up there. The 21's about 95, yeah.
Yeah, but you know, the 12 and the 15, you're looking at 40 and 50, something like that, pounds a bottle. So this is quite a little bit, you know, up there, but it's certainly, given how rare the actual liquid is and the quality as well, I think it's certainly justified.
So, I believe it's me next. I think.
Yeah, shoot.
For me, it's this is a weird one, and I think you might not necessarily agree on this in terms of like a desert island rum. But okay. I'm a fan, and I'll explain the story as to why I'm a fan. So this is Puss's Gunpowder Proof. So it's kind of a bit of a ode to sort of traditional navy rum. So it's bottled at 54.5%. You know, it's meant to be that rich, full sort of navy rum, boozy flavour, all the good things, essentially, for me anyway. And to be honest, I wasn't too impressed with it or overwhelmed by it or intrigued by it for a few years, actually, from kind of first trying it. And then I actually went to did a blind tasting for Imbibe magazine in Manchester at Liars Club, where we tried an ungodly amount of rum. I think it was like 22 different rums or something. Like complete blind tasting or whatever. And for me, this is the one that really stood out as being very easy to drink. Interesting, but not overcomplicated. You know, there's some subtle things going on in there, but then there's some things that smack you in the face in there as well at the same time, which for me, kind of, for the price point and, you know, for the ABV and for the history of it, even, because it is kind of like a throwback, really. I mean, there's not too many places kind of making that sort of style of rum anymore. It's great, to be honest. It's really good. Even like the 15 year, the new 15 year is delicious. The old 15 year is interesting as well, which I tried them side by side a couple of months ago in work. And I think the old 15 year has a lot more Barbados in it, whereas the new is a bit more, I think it's a bit more towards the Guyana side,
which is
very interesting. But the new bottle is way sexier than the old bottle.
It's slick.
Yeah.
It's important to note as well with the gunpowder proof plus is very essential ingredient in a painkiller.
Jesus.
Yeah, I know. It's been a while, you know. It's been a while since I've been behind a bar, so blanking.
Jack's forgotten all cocktails now. That's it.
Tell me about it.
His career's over.
I mean, I don't mess around with it too. Well, when I say mess around with it, I don't really drink Puss's too much neat. However, I am a massive fan of a painkiller. It doesn't seem that way, given that I can't even remember the name, but I'd say right now...
Painkillers are great, and you can only make them with Puss's, is the thing. Really.
Yeah. Well, I mean, technically you can do it whatever you wanted, but there's something about the flavour profile of that particular rum. It's great for anyone that's interested. It's literally just a case of a little bit of orange juice, pineapple juice, you got some coconut cream in there, and then a nice heavy measure of Puss's gunpowder. Shake it all together, strain it over some cubed ice, and you're set. It's super creamy, but it's boozy. It's got that heavy navy rum kind of backbone to it. It's a really, really good cocktail. It's almost like a kind of jacked up pina colada in a way, with a little smidge of orange juice in there. And more often than not, it's garnished with like some nutmeg shavings on the top, which I think does actually add to the drink as well. So for anyone that's
it adds that extra dimension. Yeah,
definitely. Really, really, really solid cocktail. So I mean, I've not drank. Well, I say I've not drank too much Puss's gunpowder, but I've drank plenty of painkillers. Probably what's causing the memory loss at such a young age.
too many painkillers. I believe that, let's not get into politics, but that's America's opiate crisis. Box office.
took a heavy turn.
Yeah, I don't know why I went there. There's too much time on my hands with this quarantine isolation vibe. But yeah, Puss is one of those things. It's so versatile for me anyway. Never mind just drinking it by itself, which I don't think a lot of people would enjoy. I mean, it's 55% nearly. Certainly with, it works very well with, you know, pineapple juice. Even probably in a daiquiri, actually, it'd probably be quite nice.
Be interesting.
Yeah. It'd certainly be a good take on one.
Yeah. Plus, they're coming out with they're coming out with an anniversary edition, aren't they, I believe?
They've released it, the 50th anniversary for Blacktop Day. But I believe they're pretty much all snapped up now. I think you'd be very hard-pressed to find one.
Okay. Now, fingers crossed that we're out of the situation by the end of July, or certainly, you know, at least allowed to roam freely. So could maybe try and get our hands on a little sample of it or something to give it a whirl. I imagine it's very, very complex and interesting.
Yes. I think we tried it, didn't we? And we were, we tried it with Gavin, remember?
Yeah, well, I think I always need, with any rum, it's not just an excuse. I need like a couple. I need to sit down with it, go away from it, and then try it again. And it's more often that kind of second time around where I can really make my mind up on it, if that makes any sense.
I think you know, to get a fucking a really well rounded kind of opinion on something. It needs two or three stabs at it. At least.
As I say, it's not just us making excuses. It's a good way to do it. Have a little try, even if it's something you don't like as well. Because there's been plenty of things that I've tried that I've really not liked. Obviously, come away from it, and then I go back to it again and give it another whirl. And more often than not, you'll be very surprised. There'll be certain things that you'll warm to, or that, again, it's completely situationally dependent. You know, how you feel at the time, on the day, the setting that you're in. It, give most things, you know, a second try at some point, and rum specifically. I don't want to know where you're going with that. So.
Well, I'll try anything once, maybe twice. I was going to say, what's the kill devil that we have in work that I personally have got a complete 180 on, and I think it's delicious. I think it's Jamaican.
I believe it's the Jamaican one, yeah.
But I can't remember where it's from.
No. For me. It's been a while. It's been a while since we've had a drink of it.
That's one of those things that I've tried like 4 or 5 times now, and every single time I'm like, this is better. This is better.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is it?
Yeah.
It's not Long Tom.
I honestly can't remember. It's been a long time since I've
gonna drive me
got
insane.
That bottle out of the cabinet.
But yeah. What's your next rum, Jack?
So my next one is actually a white rum. And given that we were discussing a lot of white rums in the... You're right there, speaking of white rum.
Yep.
So given that we were speaking about white rums a little bit in the last chat we had and talking about daiquiris and such, I would hope that if I was stranded on some kind of desert island or stranded in my flat, I'd at least have access to a little bit of sugar and a little bit of lime, could make some daiquiris. Or, again, as we were speaking about last time, there are plenty of white rums that just stand up by themselves completely neat. So this is a bottling by Velia. It's Forsyth, Worthy Park, 502. So it's from the Habitation Velia range. This is something that we acquired quite recently. Insanely tasty. Insanely tasty. So much fruit going on, so much flavour. For anyone that says that white rum or white spirits full stop are pretty bland and flavourless and should only be used as the base for spirits and stuff, this is should be enough to completely change your mind on that. It's derives kind of like a lot of its flavor from its super long fermentation process. So I believe that it's actually fermented for like three months, something absolutely insane. And as a result from that process, there is so many interesting and funky things that kind of shine through. On top of that, kind of like with the Worthy Park I was talking about, it creates this really almost like creamy liquid. So the mouthfeel on it is very, very smooth. Why are you pulling that face? What do you mean?
Nothing. You crack on.
Again, I don't want to know. I don't want to know. But yeah, it's fantastic. You've just got, there's so much fruit going on in there. There's almost like kind of like some coconut-y-esque flavors that shine through a little bit. A little bit of like nuttiness in a weird way. Some like cloves and things like that. It's kind of like sweet, but it's earthy. I feel like I was saying with the Hampton, and you've got the two variants, and there's one that's a little bit more higher in ABV. This sits at 57%, and I feel like that higher alcohol content actually allows like some sweetness to really kind of like shine through. It's so easy to drink. And someone looking at it, I mean, the design of all the Habitation Velia bottles, it looks kind of like a big medicine bottle. There's a lot of information on the front, which is something that I really like about their entire range. So included on there, you've got the date that it was bottled, you've got the congeners or the ester counts. There's a lot of information, super transparent. So if you're a bit of a novice or you're not familiar with the range, you look at something like that and it looks like it'll be extremely daunting to kind of like look at all this information and try and decipher what it means and what the product is going to be like. Add on an element of the fact that it's a white rum and the strength of it. I imagine it's enough to put a lot of people off, but this is, I was surprised by how good it was and how much there could be going on. And we tried it by itself. We actually had a couple of decadent daiquiris with it. It stands up. It really shines through. I can imagine you could use it in a lot of different cocktails, and all those elements that I just talked about, the flavors that are produced by those kind of like congeners that are in there, it's so fruity and full of flavor.
Maybe we should do a decadent daiquiri podcast after the last one. For me, this rum is a prime example of why we cannot categorize rums as like white, gold, dark, spiced, whatever, overproof anymore, because it is incredibly good.
Like, yeah.
Words, like, it is that, like Jack said, there's so much going on in it, and it is brilliant. It's punchy, it's subtle in so many ways as well. It's easy to drink in so many ways as well. It's great in a daiquiri. I imagine you can put it in any cocktail and it'd stand up. It'd do a job.
And all that, you know, all that flavour, kind of like all the sweetness, nothing's been added to it, you know. There's no added sugar, nothing like that. So all of that flavour, all that kind of fruit, that mouthfeel, everything, it's all just naturally formed from the process. Really authentic product.
I mean, if you're going to, well, I imagine we'll do a podcast on fermentation and how it affects things, but I'm fairly confident no one does 3-month fermentation on anything, or yeah, very rarely.
Pretty crazy. It's pretty crazy. The end product, though, is top notch. They found a little niche there, yeah.
And the worst thing is it's not cheap, I believe. But if you know what you get yourself into,
you're looking at for a bottle is like between 80 and 90 pounds, something like that, retail. I have a little Google.
It's £58.
It's only £58? Is that it?
Yeah, but I mean, if you don't know what you're getting yourself into, it's quite a lot of money to spend in the bottle.
No, of course.
But now that's... we've tried it and we know that £58 is ridiculous.
The reason why I paused for a second there was because I think I'm going to order some today, legitimately.
Yeah, it's
you can't argue with
you
that.
You can't knock it.
No. Right, that's on the list. I've got a job to do after we finish this podcast.
Yeah, what are we having?
Well, some 502 daiquiris on the menu.
Dangerous.
What I'll have to come round to yours, knock, and just leave it outside, and then, you know, move away from you.
Keep
my distance.
Well, how many are you going to leave outside then? One.
That's a good question. And a good response.
One daiquiri. I'm not interested. It's not worth anyone's effort.
Okay, I'll remember that then.
If it's a 502 one, I'd be persuaded. But...
All right then, seeing as you're slagging me off, hit me with another one from your list then. What are we saying?
Oh, well, I've gone off piece for this one, so I've actually changed my mind.
Okay.
Shout out to St. James XO. Google it. Look into St. James. Third oldest distillery in the Caribbean, I believe. Incredible stuff coming out of St. James. But it has to be Clarence Seju.
We spoke
about this before. Maybe I think on the last podcast when we were talking about daiquiris.
When we're talking about daiquiris and white rums and whatnot. Yeah.
I mean, just to recap, if no one's listened to the last one, essentially, Clarin, the whole Clarin range is bought by Luca Garno Bellier from Italy, but actually, they all come from Haiti. And they're all essentially named after the farmers that grow the sugarcane in Haiti. So the Seju is named after Michel Seju, that owns a 30-acre sugarcane sort of farm, I suppose. Farm? Is that the right word? Are they wild animals? Sugarcane. I don't want to say plantation because that's a slavery connotations, you know what I mean?
I guess it's a farm, sugarcane farm. I don't think it's 30 acres. Is hectares and acres the same thing? I think it's like either way, it's very small, isn't it?
Yeah. Tiny.
Yeah. A hectares and acres the same thing?
I think hectares are bigger.
Right.
So it might be 30 hectares then.
I don't know. It's either way, it's a very, very small. It's a very small operation that they've got going.
Very small operation, very small sugarcane. I've seen photos of it. It looks like they make it in a shed without sides, without walls, a wall-less shed, if you can imagine that, in Haiti. And what they essentially do is just crush sugarcane, boil it down, I believe, into sugarcane, kind of like sugarcane syrup, and then ferment it, distill it, bottle it. That's it. No aging involved whatsoever. It's very, very rustic, very, what's the word? Uncomplicated process, probably.
A lot of people kind of use the phrase, like, I don't really like it, but like that sort of artisanal, you know, where it's a lot of it's kind of done manually. It's not really like it's not like an automated process. Everything from the kind of harvest.
It's certainly not mass produced, is it?
Yeah, no, definitely not. And what I really like about Seju, very similarly to the 502 I was just talking about, is all the flavour that you get from it, and you get a hell of a lot of flavour from Seju. It's all derived just from the fermentation process, basically, and the distillation process. Nothing's been added to it. There's been no tampering whatsoever. It's purely just a product of the distillate itself. So like you were saying, they ferment it, they basically get the sugarcane juice, and then they actually concentrate it where they basically like heat it with some kind of like leftovers from the sugarcane that they've harvested. So it adds like some extra flavour. Are you okay over there?
Yeah, I'm fine. Technical issues, bear with them. But yeah, it's it's certainly, it's the least messed with probably rum that you'll be able to kind of commercially buy, I think.
Yeah. I think in some ways it's almost like a bit of, there's some similarities to like mezcals that are out there. And a lot of other agave spirits. What I really like about those is the flavor, that final kind of taste, it is all derivative of the raw materials that are used to make it. And I think that nowadays that is really what I favor. I'm not a massive fan of something that is like a flavored, you know, it's had a lot of additionals added to it. I really like it when it's the raw ingredient that shines through. And like Seju, they've got some very, very unique sugar cane that's growing in that small area, don't they? And again, the methodology and the way in which they make it, and they kind of like concentrate down that sugar cane juice, it creates a very, very unique final product that you wouldn't be able to kind of like, you wouldn't be able to try and copy somewhere else.
No. I think it's, to not tread too much into wanky wine territory, it's a celebration of sort of terroir of Haiti, I suppose, and you know, that sort of climate, that particular region, that particular sugarcane. They don't fuck with it at all, really. I mean, they're essentially just getting that flavour of that sugarcane and literally distilling it into alcoholic booze liquid that we can drink.
Really get that when you drink it too, don't you? It's just like, pow, this is it. You know, no mess.
And we've not even spoke about what it tastes like yet.
Well, you know, good luck describing that. How would you describe it to someone?
Jesus, I mean, there's so much stuff going on. There's that vegetal kind of traditional agricultural sort of flavour, but that's kind of takes a back seat, I think. It's not too in your face. Unless if you try like Trois Rivières, they're just their blank, which is 50%, I think, which is less than Seju usually is. That's way more that vegetal sort of taste, whereas this has got like weird like underripe banana going on in there. There's some other weird fruits going on, like tropical fruit going on there. There's almost like, I always get like a weird like creamy note to it, which sounds bizarre, but it's in there somewhere.
I think that's kind of a note of, I get that with a lot of agricoles. I feel like it's must be some kind of like product of, you know, using sugarcane juice or syrup rather than molasses. There's that creamy, it's that kind of slightly thicker actual, like, you know, final product mouthfeel, and also as well that kind of taste as well. I always get a little hint of that. So again, this is super smooth, even though the flavors themselves smack you in the face. It's not harsh in any way.
It's one of those things where I think you probably need to warm up to it. I don't think any sort of person could really be a novice rum drinker without trying a few other different things and trying things that maybe like sort of usually sits around 54% whenever they release it.
Yeah. Speaking of like the wine crowd as well that you mentioned before, like I reckon people that are very big into wine would probably like something like this. Due to what you mentioned, I think there's a lot of flavor profiles that are derivative from the region that it's come from, and I feel like a lot of kind of wine enthusiasts would be a fan of this one, despite the fact that it's a white rum and it's strong. And
I think for them, if you drop a few, put a few drops of water in there, I think it will probably sit very well with them. It'd be very interesting to see what they think about it.
It's really nice as well over here. In my opinion, I think it's really cool that they pay quite a lot of homage to the producers. As you said, you know, it's named after the people that actually are producing it. The bottles themselves are very, very slick. They come in quite tall, like skinny bottles. I believe that the artwork that's on there is all locally,
it's like Haitian artists. Also, the bottles look incredible. Like, the artwork on all the bottles is made. Like, the whole Clarin range, by the way, is beautiful.
And they're all very different as well.
Yeah.
So you've got what do you have? You've got Seju, you've got Vival, you've got Casimir.
Yeah.
They're all very different. And then you've got one called Clarin Communal that's like a blend of them all. And there's also, they run a really cool competition for bartenders. It's like the Clarin World Championships. And people kind of like get together. I don't know the ins and outs of how they work the way through to the final, but I believe that whoever kind of wins the comp gets to release their own bottling style. So we have the 2017, is that right? The Clarin 2017
that we tried. 2017, yeah. Which is a blend, I think, of like four different Clarins.
Okay.
That basically the people that won this cocktail competition that year got to blend together, which is quite exciting.
Yeah. So it's really cool when, from a bartender's perspective, when there are people out there that are running stuff like this, gives you a very interesting opportunity. And it also kind of like keeps the creative juices flowing. There's always new stuff happening. I believe that whenever Clarin do like a different batch, they always vary, don't they? Both like the product itself, the strength, and the way it's bottled, the artwork and that kind of thing, it will always vary.
So. Yeah, I believe they release them pretty much yearly. So they've just started releasing some aged things with Clarin. So you forgot, Jack, by the way, you forgot La Rocha, which I believe was our favourite one, which is like the smoky one, right?
Yeah, because I knew there was one more because it didn't seem right that they named three. I knew there was four and then they're kind of like communal.
Oh, La Rocha is something else as well, but the Seju is...
Unfortunately, in Smugglers, the only ones that we have at the moment are the Seju, the Communal, and the World Championship. The rest of the expressions we don't have at the moment, but we're big fans of. I went when I was at Imbibe last year. I mean, I've had them all before, but I just kind of like hung around the speciality stand for a little bit and just kept drinking Clarin.
Snake, absolutely snake. I think, spoiler alert, we will be getting some of the aged ones in Smugglers.
Yeah. Are they available in the UK yet? Is that right? I'm not sure if they are.
I've seen them
popping up in Europe.
I will get them. Don't you worry. They'll be coming to Smugglers very soon, no doubt, because we'll be the only people probably that have them. The final rum.
I
think.
Cool.
Yeah,
I think so. I think we've done five. Well, I guess because we both had the El Dorado, it was kind of like, it was a crossover, wasn't it?
I don't know. The Red Nephew's starting to take effect. So
it started to kick in. So my fifth and final one's an interesting one. So it's actually from St. Lucia Distillers. So it's their 1931 range. I believe they've got six editions. I don't even know how many are available at the moment. We have the fourth, fifth, and sixth one. And we've not had the pleasure of trying the 1, 2, and 3. There might be some still knocking around somewhere.
Rare as
I think they are quite
chicken teeth.
But well, I mean, yeah, it's not something that we've managed to get our hands on at the moment. So we'll see. We'll see. But as I say, the fourth, fifth, and sixth. We've had the pleasure of trying multiple times. We actually once did a very big tasting with Dave. Shout out to Dave, who has a lot of involvement with Chairman's Reserve and also just St. Lucia Distillers and just the place in general. He's always back and forth from the sounds of things. We once did a big tasting. It was like all the Chairman's range, the Bounty range, the Admiral Rodney's and 1931s. What's very interesting about the 1931s is they get quite experimental with them all. So each time they do release an edition, they tend to be very, very unique and interesting. What kind of like stands out for me with the fifth edition, and for anyone that is looking for it online, you'll notice it because it's got a very, very distinct, vibrant pink label.
It's bright pink.
Yeah, and this, it's a blend of like many, many different rums. I actually took some notes when we did the tasting that time. We got given like a full breakdown of everything that's in there. I mean, if you really want me to run through it with you, I can do it.
I have the amounts also.
Yeah, there's a lot of different things in there, but a couple of key things is that it's a mixture of like column and pot still. There's like four rums in there that are column still, and they're aged for like 9 to 10 years in bourbon and in port casks. So you've got a lot of interesting flavor notes from there, but also column still tends to be slightly lighter. I would say that on the whole, rums from St. Lucia kind of sit more in the kind of lighter category anyway. There's still plenty of flavor to be derived from them, but they, you know, it's not quite as full and in your face as something like a Jamaican or a Guyana rum will be. So you've got all that element.
I think they're quite similar to sort of almost like some Bayesian rums can be, whereas that obviously that sort of pot and column sort of blend, which most of them do in Barbados. I think St. Lucia's quite similar to that, but it doesn't quite have the same reputation yet. But I think there's certainly some good stuff to be had with them, and this is a prime example.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. So I've got my notes from the time when we had a little tasting, so I do it justice and don't mess it up. But so you've got those column still elements there, and then there are a few different pot still elements that are in there as well that really contribute to a lot of the flavor profile. So you've got kind of blend of rum from, well, it's not a blend, it's one of the rums in the blend is from what is known as the John Doe pot still. So that's very, very flavorful. And then that is an aged in bourbon, ex-bourbon casks for 10 years. So that is creating a lot of flavor. Next up, you've got something from what is known as the Vendome pot still. It's basically like a 2,000 liter pot still. And that, I believe, is also aged for 10 years in bourbon. Yeah, that's like a 10-year bourbon mix.
So those together, by the way, make up just over half, about 53% of the blend.
So that's what I was going to say. So basically, you've got like those two elements that I just mentioned, and then an extra element is kind of like a mixture of those two together that have basically been separated straight after distillation, and then they're set aside to age. But one of the most interesting things about this is that there is also an element of agricole rum in there as well, which I believe that St. Lucia don't do too much of. I think it's quite rare to come across.
I've never seen a release because St. Lucia Distillers are the only distillery on the island, I believe. Certainly they export anything. I've not heard of anyone else. As far as I'm aware, they do not commercially release any agricole whatsoever, so...
Yeah. So there's that kind of element to it as well. And I think that not only is like a bit of agricole rum in there, but it's also aged in ex-bourbon for kind of like 6 to 7 years, which there certainly are some more aged agricole products that are starting to come to market. I think as a whole, agricole rum is starting to, it's on the up and up at the moment. It's gaining some more popularity. A very notable example is like Trois Rivieres. Their 12-year is fantastic.
It was very close to making this list, put it that way. I think by one or both of us. It's one of those things that completely will change people's minds on agricole, I think. Don't get me wrong, it takes a lot of drinking it, I think, to get used to it, especially with our British sweet palates.
Yeah. So in total, in this kind of like whole mix, you've got like around 80% has kind of seen bourbon for sort of like 7 to 10 years. You've got around 18% of the overall blend that's seen bourbon for 9 to 10. You've got like 4 to 5% that's seen port casks for almost 10 years as well. And then you've got the agricole that's in there as well. So you've got this whole massive, funky, complicated blend that's going on.
I believe
in there.
It's about 9% agricole, sorry.
Is that right? Yeah. Okay, yeah. Cool. So all in all, it just creates, I mean, the bottom line that from all of the elements that we just kind of mentioned, the main and most important thing is the end result. It's it's not, despite sounding superly, sometimes I, whether I'm making cocktails or it's, you know, blends of rum, I feel like sometimes it can be a case of too many cooks spoil the broth. You know, if you add in, you can add A, B and C and they're all absolutely fantastic. But if you add them all together, the elements that really make each one of those things individually special, they kind of all get lost in translation. Do you know what I mean? But I feel like with this fifth edition, 1931, that it just adds complexity and flavour. It's a really, really nice kind of hash of a lot of different elements.
I think whoever's blended this is a wizard, because for me, it very much combines all the good things from pot still, all the good things from the little bit of column still in there, and all the good things from agricole as well, and kind of merges them together in a way that makes sense, I think, and doesn't get too convoluted and overwhelming and a bit kind of loses the good bits out of everything.
Yeah.
I think.
Because I remember trying the 4th, 5th and 6th together, and obviously they're all great and they're all interesting for their, you know, own unique purposes. But the 5th in particular really, really stood out to me. And as a result, I mean, I would never really mix it with anything, I don't think. I mean, I'm sure that it would work well in cocktails. I can't really think, nothing springs to mind that I think, you know what, I would love to use that as like a base for it. I would rather just drink it as it is. It almost feels layered when you drink this. You get hit with a lot of different elements and it's so nice and it takes... Go on, go ahead.
There's a nice structure to it, I think. That it's nice, you kind of get everything in order, for me anyway. Like whenever I've tasted it, which is only like 2 or 3 times really, but it's very structured, and it's like you get your nice St. Lucia pot still stuff, you get your nice St. Lucia column still stuff, and then you get that little bit of agricole, like dry finish almost. But
yeah, certainly. A lot of tropical vibes. A lot of tropical vibes. Not had the pleasure of going to St. Lucia just yet, but fingers crossed in the near future it'll be something that I would certainly like to sit on a beach and have a few sips of that, yeah. For sure.
Very many.
So I think that's my 5. Certainly my 5 for now. What is great, again, like about rum, just on the whole, as a category, this, you know, if you came to me in 6 months, my answers to this question will be completely different.
I agree.
And it's not because there are things that come out that are better or what. Everything is just different, you know? Everything is just different, and it's constantly evolving and changing, and there's more new things out there to try. It's a really, really... It's a very exciting time for rum, I feel.
I think you have to look at like our palates as well. Like they kind of differ so much from probably when we first tasted all these things to now. I think it's probably completely different. And it's been like, you know, a couple of years for some of them. It's certainly changed a lot, and it's interchangeable, like stuff that we enjoy. Like you go through phases, like anything, like, you know, sometimes I'm drinking a lot of Smith & Cross, sometimes I'm drinking a lot of Hampton, sometimes I'm drinking a lot of Worthy Park, sometimes I'm drinking a lot of agricole. Like, it kind of varies on the time, the mood, the place, I suppose, but we've been starved of rum, if anything, for the last couple of weeks.
That is absolutely it. Like I said, I think I'm going to have to look online, maybe place a little order just to keep me going, especially after discussing this today as well. Like, some of the prices for me now are kind of mind-blowing, you know. It's not something that we always look at buying, given that we like are fortunate enough to have it to hand, so sometimes if you want to play around with something or have a little drink, you know, and sample some things, it's there, so you don't always think about
a little one
maybe having to maybe having to get yourself a full bottle in and whatever, but who knows how much longer we're going to be in this situation. And I'm like, as I said, my rum store's depleted, so I think now's the time to stock up.
So how would you want to drop it off to me? Like, you're just going to leave it outside covered in sanitizer and I'll collect it all?
Well, after the last comments you made about not appreciating my 502 daiquiris, I'm not going to bother stopping by.
Angry. Never diss a man's daiquiris, apparently, because it's going to cost you rum in the long run. So, Jack, you're doing the whole spiel this week of where to follow us, where to find us, etc., etc., etc.
Yeah, okay. Cool. I was going to say, like, I feel like, well, we've not seen each other. I mean, we've not seen each other in person for a while.
Who are you again?
We've not done this for the last week, so I feel like we've got a lot to say to each other. So this might have dragged on longer than we thought it would initially. So on Instagram, just run with it, all one word. You can follow us there. On YouTube as well, we've got the same name, just run with it. You can follow our channel. We've got our previous two podcasts that we've done on there. We'll obviously be uploading this one as well, and more in the near future. We are planning on doing some specific kind of, like, as we alluded to earlier, we're talking about maybe doing like one on distillation, one on fermentation. We might also actually get some guests on the podcast at some point and talk about specific products or brands or cocktails. As always, if you've got any questions, you know, feel free to leave them in the comments. If you know us personally, obviously drop one of us a message if there's something you'd like to know about rum or you want us to speak about something specifically. It actually helps us a lot because we quite often go off on little tangents, and if we've got a set structure and we've got things that we want, or we've got like lined up to discuss,
for us the more specific the better, I think, because we get distracted very easily.
Yeah, absolutely. So if there's anything you want to know about, and we can go as in depth as you want. Should I think what else we need to cover? Any other bits on social media?
We might be doing an Instagram live on Just Run With It on the 28th.
Cool. Okay,
not sure on time yet. But if you follow us on Just Run With It on Instagram, we will post it on there. But I believe it is sometime on the 28th, which is at the moment 4 days away. Probably when you listen to this, 3 days away.
Okay. Yeah, I don't even know what date is anymore. So
it'll be next one of the days. Next week.
Nice. Cool. Well, what we can do is we can always post like a we can post something in advance, can't we? Like a date and a time, whatnot.
That's the idea, yes. Cool. Other than that, it's been a pleasure. Again, we've been talking about rums we really enjoy to drink, so can't really complain.
Absolutely.
Ciao for now. We'll see you.
See you next time.
See you next time. Have fun, guys. Bye-bye.